Hello everyone, and welcome back to the History of Scotland, episode 24, Death of a King. Now, before we begin today, I would like to recommend a brand new podcast I recently got listening to. This podcast is the Anglo-Saxon English Podcast. Anglo-Saxon England is a podcast looking at the history of Anglo-Saxon England, beginning with the end of Roman Britain and ending with the Norman Conquest. They will not only talk about the history, but also the literature, culture, and historiography of the Anglo-Saxon period. This show strove to offer an accessible but scholarly, rigorous overview that will appear to both beginners and to experts of history lovers. Thomas Kearns, who is the owner and runs the podcast, is originally from Birmingham in the UK. He studied Anglo-Saxon, Norse, and Celtic at Cambridge University, followed by a master's in Oxford and a doctorate in Anglo-Saxon history from Durham. A longtime fan of other history podcasts, he decided during the pandemic to start his first podcast, Anglo-Saxon England, to help make scholarly work on this period more accessible to a wider audience. I honestly can't recommend Thomas's work more. His podcast is well structured and the episodes he has produced are really assisting me with my earlier episode rewrites I mentioned last time. So please, go give it a listen. That is the Anglo-Saxon England podcast, which is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and Podbean. That is the Anglo-Saxon England podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and Podbean. Anyhow, back to the show. Last time, we told a brief or rather fast history of the Normans. We went through Rollo's arrival in France, to the formation of the Kingdom of Sicily, and then finally we went through what a Norman knight was as a person. They were fighters, leaders, great followers of the Christian faith, but they were also ruthless, strong-minded, and very prone to selfish exploits. I think without them, Europe and Scotland as a whole will be very different, and the impact they have left is certainly felt throughout the ages. So this week it's time, well, for an episode I didn't actually want to write, as I was enjoying his reign so much, for The Death of a King, where we close the book on Malcolm III. We have found out today how he dies, and what that means for Scotland going forward. Will his death lead Scotland back into the depths of civil war with the inheritance? I think if you've been paying attention, you probably know the answer to that. But let's find out and hope this doesn't revert all the great changes Malcolm and Margaret have done for Scotland. When we last left Malcolm, he was in the north of England, raiding his way and passing Bamburgh. The land around him was empty, with no defending force. Without a second thought, Malcolm continued to press on. With him was his heir Edward, his brother-in-law Edgar, and his son Edgar as well, and also a mass host of Scottish warriors. Was this a trap? Well, let's find out. If we take a look back at how we got here in the first place, just on a recap level, when King William II of England, known as William Rufus, succeeded his father William the Conqueror as King of England in 1087, he appointed strong barons in the north of England to control the border and prevent Scottish incursions into Northumbria and Cumbria. Malcolm nursed ill feelings towards Rufus after he had been treated extremely badly at the court of the English king when he travelled south to pay homage for his English lands. Malcolm also held ambitions towards both Cumbria and Northumbria, and in May 1091 he launched an invasion of Northumbria and laid siege to Durham. William Rufus led a large English army north to confront him. Advancing into Scotland, he forced Malcolm into retreat, pursuing the Scots as far as Falkirk. Eventually a truce was negotiated and William Rufus withdrew. But if you remember, William Rufus rebuffed Malcolm again and refused to meet him. Enraged, Malcolm left the peace negotiations and headed home to bring his army upon England again. In November 1093, undaunted, Malcolm and his son Edward led a further assault into Northumbria. After plundering the plains east of the Cheviot Hills, which appeared to be rather empty of inhabitants and the lack of defence, but onwards Malcolm pushed and then he laid siege to Alnwick Castle, one of the strongest castles in Northumbria. Malcolm camped his main army north of the River Alne, on the slopes of the hill overlooking the valley. In reality, Robert de Mowbray, Earl of Northumbria, then at his stronghold of Bamburgh Castle, did not possess a strong enough force to oppose the Our King in open battle. Nevertheless, he set out to Alnwick to attempt to relieve the castle. Mowbray arrived at the castle on St. Brice Day on the 13th of November, taking the Scots army totally by surprise. The English force attacked them before the ramparts of Alnwick, throwing the unprepared Scots into complete confusion. In the final skirmish, King Malcolm's vanguard was smashed by English warriors. Malcolm fought with ferocity and took down many English soldiers before him, but he was eventually brought down and killed in the fighting. His son, Edward, the heir to the throne, who saw what was happening, tried to save his father, but he himself was mortally wounded. The spring near which Malcolm and his son met their death subsequently became known as Malcolm's Spring, or Malcolm's Well. Traditionally, the king received his mortal wound from a lance, where a sandstone Gothic style cross dating to the 18th century and erected by the Duchess of Northumberland, a descendant of Malcolm, to his memory, and now stands at the side of the road. It replaced an older rough stone memorial that once marked the site of the battle. With Malcolm's death, the Scottish army found itself leaderless and routed, with Edgar, his brother-in-law, fleeing the battlefield with the remains of the army, heading straight to Edinburgh, where his sister, the Queen, was. Malcolm's body was left on the battlefield, decomposing, and was not brought home with Edgar, a king that has been our focus for so many episodes, having a brutal end similar to his father and Macbeth's, dying in battle. But this time his body was unretrievable, initially, so the following source depicts what happens to his body next. And since none of his men remained to cover it with earth, two of the natives placed the king's body in a cart and buried it in Tynemouth. If we now look at the man who defeated Malcolm in this ambush, he rather met a cruel end too. Robert de Mowbray subsequently joined a baronial conspiracy against William Rufus in 1095. As a result, he was depossessed and imprisoned for life. Maybe this would bring peace to the queen and her remaining sons. Would it? No. No, it wouldn't. Her son Edgar and brother Edgar were left with the task of informing his mother of their deaths. Not yet 50 years old, Margaret, Queen of Scotland, our future saint of Scotland, died in Edinburgh on the 16th of November 1093, 3 days after the deaths of her husband and eldest son. The cause of death was reportedly grief, but as we told in her episode as well, she was prone to fasting, so her health may have already been pretty bad, and this maybe tipped her over the edge. Margaret was a great character of Scotland, and honestly, her story and life from exile in Hungary, becoming one of the famous queens of Scotland, it's sad. Sad that we have to say goodbye. Sad that we have to say goodbye to two great rulers of Scotland. The power vacuum they left in Scotland would certainly cause trouble. But this disruption did not end here. Malcolm, who was initially buried in the field in Tynemouth Priory, after the battle, like we said, before being reintertwined at Dunfermline Abbey with Margaret in 1250, by which time Margaret had been canonised. In 1560, as we spoke about in Margaret's episode, Margaret, Queen of Scots, removed Margaret's head to Edinburgh Castle to help with childbirth, but it was later taken to France, but was lost during the French Revolution. Philip II of Spain also had some of their remains removed, this time to Madrid. But again, these have since been lost. So both bodies are just all over the place and missing, which is very sad for one of two Scotland's greatest rulers and one of Scotland's greatest saints. Malcolm had one older son left with his first wife, as mentioned, Duncan. So first wife being that of the person who Macbeth sided with during Duncan the First's reign, his wife. But not only did Malcolm have Duncan available to be an heir, but with Margaret they also had many other sons. They were Edmund, Alfred, Edgar, Alexander, and David. But trouble was brewing. Malcolm's brother, the last surviving son of Duncan the First, Donald, had other plans. If you remember, he never came to the court in Edinburgh, and now this is probably why. John of Fordon reports that Donald invaded the kingdom after Queen Margaret's death. at a head of a numerous band and laid siege to Edinburgh with Malcolm's sons by Margaret inside. Fordun has Margaret's brother, Edgar Efflin, take his nephews to England to keep them safe. Andrew of Wynton's much simpler account has Donald become king and banish his nephews. The Anglo-Saxon Chronicle records only that Donald was chosen as king and expelled the English from the court, but considering Margaret's sons were considered very English by Scottish standards, by the names and how the court was being changed into the Anglo-style court, I'm not surprised the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle may be potentially referring to the sons as English. Regardless, the reason Donald wasn't at the court at Edinburgh was now clear. He was preparing to take the throne for himself when the moment arose. Now he had the chance, and he took it. Edgar took the sons of Malcolm to the English court for refuge, and there, along with the recently arrived Duncan, Malcolm's son with his first wife, they began to plot their revenge on Donald. And maybe they would learn some English-style customs in this Norman court that they would maybe take to Scotland themselves in the future. Maybe a certain David who is currently there, David I in future, would do something like that. Who knows? We'll have to wait for that to come about in the future. But for that, we'll have to wait until next time. I know. Shock. Horror. Who do I think I am? Well, I am certainly not trying to write Game of Thrones here. Instead, I want us to go over Malcolm himself, his character, and give a sort of mini-review of a king. Malcolm is probably one of our first rulers that we have had a lot of information about, and he has been in our story for so long now, many episodes. So, from Duncan, the first murder, through Macbeth, and now his own reign, I feel it's only fair if we give him a proper send-off in terms of review. So that's what we'll do, and then next time we'll touch upon his brother, his rule, and how his sons took back the throne of Scotland and began to expand the Dunkeld dynasty into one of Scotland's greats. Anyway, rather impressively, Malcolm killed not one, but two of his predecessors, Macbeth and Lulloch. This doubleheader was a prelude to a remarkable stable period for Scotland internally, with the only other internal strife being an expedition into Moray in 1078. This showed Malcolm on the front foot against Lulloch's son. And if you remember, according to the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle, he captured a lot of the men and treasures and livestock in Moray. This must have been a major expedition, and it completely nullified the threat for the rest of the reign. Malcolm was the most active, however, in pushing the limits of the border with England, making 5 raids between 1061 and 1093, of which only the last can be said to have gone badly, admittedly exceptionally badly given that he was killed. He tended to time the raids to coincide with his rivals, initially Saxon but later Norman, being away from home, and then withdrew before a vengeful army could bring him to heel. He seems to have more or less fully conquered the Old Kingdom of Strathclyde in the aftermath of 1066, if you remember, and was a constant thorn in the side of the Normans in Northumbria. However, Malcolm was not just a mindless warlord and demonstrated an effective use of diplomacy to promote his territorial endeavours. If you remember, his first marriage may have helped him secure the Scottish throne and certainly helped secure his northern borders. Previous rulers had struggled against the Viking incursions. Now Malcolm's allies, they were. He had good links with Tostig and Harald Hardrada ahead of 1066, but avoided getting sucked into conflict, meaning he stood to gain whatever the outcome. His marriage to Margaret enhanced his status, gave his children a potential claim to England, and helped Malcolm in his ambition to dominate Durham. In 1093, he was the only layman present at the laying of the foundation stone for Durham Cathedral, and was well respected by the monks, who pledged to say prayers for his soul for the rest of his life. Arguably, however, Malcolm's flatterers deceive. Aside from his successes in Scotland, there are no great victories about which he can boast, which he deserves kudos for surviving the chaos of 1066. Indeed, he even outlived William the Conqueror. He showed a lack of ambition by not throwing his hat into the ring and does not seem to have taken full advantage to improve his position. Perhaps a Scottish army fighting with Tostig and Hardrada could have been decisive. Similarly, he could have thrown his weight behind Edgar the Efflin and many other revolts against the Normans in 1068 to 1069. Teaming up with the Vikings could have proven fatal to William. What's more, Malcolm's raids never been anything more than substantial, then a temporary incursion, and he was quick to leave the scene and ask for terms whenever the Normans sent a proper army after him. Indeed, Malcolm's reign features a lot of submitting to the Normans. In 1072, he was forced to give up Edgar and give his son Duncan as a hostage to William. If you remember, Duncan is his first son, and a person he would go on to serve with Robert Curthose. This held until 1079, with Malcolm actually rejecting a call by Edgar to join a rebellion in 1074. In 1080, Malcolm submitted again and was faced with a new castle, literally Newcastle, which alongside Rufus building a castle at Carlisle meant that Malcolm now had two major Norman fortresses much further north than the English had previously been. Rufus definitely seemed to get the better of Malcolm, not least in winding him up in 1093, leading to Malcolm getting himself killed at Alnwick. Malcolm's record is not quite as impressive as you might imagine for a king who spends a lot of his time being battlery. If he had secured a victory in Northumbria against the Normans, then his tally chart would look a lot better, but as it is, he promises a lot without ever quite going all out enough to really achieve anything. So many of the Scottish kings to come to the throne by killing their predecessor that it hardly seems worth mentioning. However, Malcolm III went one step further by killing not one but two of his predecessors, which is unprecedented. What's more, killings have a whiff of sneaky tactics on Malcolm's part. He may well have colluded with Lulloch to kill Macbeth. They had a common bond in that Macbeth had killed their fathers. While sources suggest that Lulloch was killed by treachery by Malcolm, suggesting that if he did make a deal, Malcolm then reneged on it. It's a bit of a stretch, but Malcolm's two marriages also have a slight whiff of sauciness. His first widow of his first cousin once removed, whilst Margaret had her heart set on being a nun. So a sort of relative and a sort of nun for his two wives. Because of Malcolm's battery outlook, we do not have much evidence of truly scandalous activity. Furthermore, he appears to have been devoted and faithful to Margaret, and it was a very happy marriage. Despite being a king mainly dedicated to warfare, Malcolm's reign is most celebrated for the positive effect it had on Scotland. Malcolm brought stability to a country that had experienced almost perpetual conflict for the last century due to dynastic rivalries. Oh, how times were simpler back then. Apart from one rebellion in Moray, there was no internal conflict at all following Malcolm's accession. His first marriage helped secure Scotland's northern and western borders with the Vikings, and apart from a couple of Norman expeditions north, this was a time of peace within the country. Particularly celebrated is the role played by Malcolm's wife, Margaret, or St. Margaret, as she would later become, of Wessex. Although a Saxon by blood, she was initially brought up at a very devout Hungarian court and was instrumental in encouraging the Scottish Church to come more in line with the continental practices. She even held councils with church leaders to persuade them to make changes and wrote the Archbishop of Canterbury to secure the services of some monks for the new priory at Dunfermline. The royal court became more luxurious, with Margaret encouraging the importing and wearing of luxury items, particularly for her and Malcolm. She encouraged Malcolm to do good works, washing the feet of paupers during Lent and Advent, and appearing having sufficient influence that her chaplain, Turgot, was amazed to see Malcolm in earnest prayer. This is often seen as a pivotal reign in Scottish history, with a recognisable Scotland emerging from the obscurity of Dark Ages into the medieval era. Malcolm and Margaret laid the foundations for medieval Scotland and a new era in the nation's history, and that's why I'm changing the story from the Kingdom of Alba to the Kingdom of Scotland, as I truly feel like we have transformed to that now. Conversely, Margaret's prominent role is sometimes seen as a reflecting the limitations of Malcolm's role. He's often depicted as a barbarian Celtic warrior, and Margaret is always depicted as the beautiful English queen that is the real cause for all the changes going on in Scotland at this time. While Margaret was certainly the lead on many issues, Malcolm's role should not be considered insignificant, as it was inconceivable that any of these changes could have been made without his approval and support. Indeed, Turgot related that Margaret's debates with the church leaders were only made possible by Malcolm, as he had to translate for Margaret, who did not speak the language. However, the language issue is another point of criticism. For many people, Margaret's reforms represent the beginning of Scotland being Anglicised to the detriment of the Scottish tradition and culture. Margaret provided refuge for English exiles at the Scottish court, while her children with Malcolm were given Saxon names. We might also criticise Malcolm for his conduct in his Northumbrian raids. Technically, these were attacks on foreigners rather than his own people, but he was obstinately attempting to dominate this territory, and various accounts of his harsh treatment of the locals does not present the most enduring portrait. Old men, women, were some beheaded by swords, others struck with spears like pigs destined for food. Torn from their mother's breasts, babies were tossed high in the air and caught on the spikes of spears fixed close together on the ground. But the youths and girls and all who seemed fit for work and toil were bound and driven in front of the enemy to be made slaves and handmaids in perpetual exile. And that was a Simon of Durham in 1070 giving an account of Malcolm's raid. Another account, which comes from the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle, states, King Malcolm returned to Scotland, and soon after he came home, he gathered his army and came harrowing into England with more hostility than behaved of him. Of course, these accounts may have well been exaggerated, with English sources keen to portray the Scots as barbaric. However, if true, it does represent the harsh tactics of the period. It was a common tactic to waste the land and limit the economic resources and pressure the area into submission, i.e. the shock and awe rather than the hearts and minds trick. Malcolm's reign was a pivotal time in Scottish history, with the combination of Malcolm's strong and stable rule paired with Margaret's church and court reforms transforming the country, while Malcolm's personal role in perhaps a little limited, and arguably his descendants, made more significant changes. He was a very successful king, and Scotland was a more organised, stable, sophisticated nation state in comparison to the days of his predecessors. Incredibly, Malcolm left at least 10 surviving children as well. So this is a record total for Scottish monarchs. Technically, one of those survivors is a little tenuous. His son Edward died soon after his disaster at the Castle of Alnwick, but by the letter of the law, he was a legitimate surviving child at the time that Malcolm himself died, even if he died a few moments later. As it happened, it was just as well that Malcolm had so many children. His offspring would prove rather less fusid, and a surprisingly large number of his sons would get the opportunity to be king. Besides a record total of offspring, he provided the 3 decades of strong and stable rule after a century of infighting and having had to kill his 2 predecessors. His marriage to Margaret saw significant reforms at the court and in the church, as we mentioned, and ushered Scotland into the medieval age. Arguably, Margaret was so influential as to overshadow her husband, and he tended to come off as second best in his conflict with the Norman rulers of Scotland. However, this did not have a serious detriment impact on Scotland, and Malcolm III must be considered one of the most successful rulers of medieval Scotland. Well, that is it then. That is Malcolm III finally done. Hurrah! The book on him now is only partially closed, as his sons will go on to rule Scotland through the 4 great rulers we have coming up next, really cementing the Dunkeld dynasty as one of Scotland's greats. The changes his sons will go on to perform will change Scotland into a European-style court, but the essence of the Pictish heritage will never disappear. Eventually, his sons will fail Malcolm, though, in terms of carrying on the family line, which will ultimately land us in the famous succession crisis with Edward I, the Hammer of the Scots. But that, dear listeners, is many episodes in the future. So for now, we are safe from the English heathens. Next time, we'll begin the reign of the semi-usurper Donald III, as he tries to consolidate his reign and power. I'm sure he would prefer to capture Malcolm's sons, his nephews, before they escaped, as now they'll be a pain in his backside all the way to his death. But hey, no spoilers, that is for next week. As mentioned, please give the Anglo-Saxon English podcast a listen if you wish to learn more about Edgar's and Margaret's family and people's history. This is a great podcast for any early medieval history lovers out there. Thank you again to everyone for the continued support on this series. If you have the time, please do head to our Twitter at thehistoryofse1 or type in the History of Scotland podcast. If you wish to also discuss the episodes with myself, please head to our Facebook group, which is called History of Scotland. As always, any corrections or issues with the podcast, please let me know at historyofscotlandpodcast@gmail.com. That is historyofscotlandpodcast@gmail.com. Please leave a review if you can, and our podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, and many other great podcasting sites. Next podcast will be next week, as always. So until then, stay safe, have a great week, guys, and I'll catch you all on the next one. Peace.